I'm impressed with the school in every aspect, the administration, the faculty, the students. I've enjoyed it. With those observations, I'll be glad to answer any questions. Yes, ma'am.
I
believe that the Democrats lost more than they had hoped for. The Republicans didn't gain as much as they had planned on. The net result is there is some shift to the Republicans. We made good gains in the gubernatorial races, a net of 6. We made our best gain in the Senate races with a net pickup of 3. We were disappointed in the gains in the House of Representatives. A very important gain, however, was in the state legislative contest, where my last count was that we made a net gain of about 300, that we became a majority party in a number of legislative bodies. That, of course, will have a significant impact on redistricting following the census of 1980. Another very interesting aspect of the election last Tuesday was the fact that about 75% of the spending limitations or taxing limitations were approved. This will have an impact on particularly state spending and state taxation. Overall, I would say there was a tilt or a trend toward a more moderate, perhaps more conservative voting pattern.
Ronald Reagan is already beginning to make noises about the candidate for 1980. What about Gerald Ford?
I have made no decision. I've been so preoccupied, really, with campaigning for everybody else, I haven't had an opportunity to focus on my own plans in a political sense. I'll probably take some time in the next several months, talk with some advisors, look at the situation, analyze it in relationship to my own personal plans, and see where we go. But in all honesty, I have not made any overtures in any way whatsoever as far as 1980 is concerned.
Mr. Ford, yesterday you had said that Carter, as we all know, has decided to increase the civil defense program. You said that that would not be high on your list of priorities, but you would like to see the real growth of the military budget increase by 3-4%. We still have the ongoing controversy of Project Seafarer out here. Where would you put that particular project on your list?
Well, my record in reference to Seafarer is well known. It's documented. While I was president, I looked into it very carefully because I wanted to be sure that the civilian and military leaders in the Pentagon were giving me an honest evaluation. On the basis of the details that were presented to me by both civilian as well as military leaders in the Pentagon, I made a decision, and it's a matter of record, that we should proceed with Seafarer. I think the need and necessity to have the best communication between our top military leaders in a crisis with those submarines that are patrolling or operating is highly essential. It's mandatory. It's in our national security. We need that kind of communication. And on the basis of that recommendation by the civilian and military leaders in the Pentagon, I made the recommendation for the us to proceed with the Seafarer. I've seen nothing, to my knowledge at least, that would change that point of view.
If you were president today, then that would be high on your list of priorities.
Based on the recommendations that were made to me 2.5 to 3 years ago, where I intimately was involved in the process. If there are any developments today that I'm not familiar with, it might have an impact on my decision. But based on the knowledge that I had, which was an intimate investigation on a personal basis in 1976, I would make the same decision. If there are new factors involved, of course I would review it in light of those new that new information.
Mr. Ford, President Carter says that he will continue to pressure crude oil taxes, which could push the cost of gasoline per gallon up 10 cents. And I'm wondering what your opinion of that continuation of the crude oil tax fight is all about.
I strongly disagreed with President Carter's crude oil tax proposal, his proposal also to impose a gasoline tax. And if he is going to repeat the request for a crude oil wellhead tax, if he's going to repeat a request for a gasoline tax, I'm going to continue my strong, strong opposition.
How would you do that?
Well, by repeating every place I am asked the question that I am opposed to it, and I probably will make a speech or two where I will reiterate my total opposition to the tax program of President Carter as it involves the energy program. I think it's the wrong approach. It was wrong when he proposed it in 1975. It'll be, or 1977. It'll be wrong if he proposes it or reiterates it in 1978. It's bad economics. It's bad energy. And it ought to be defeated.
Talk that OPEC nations are considering possibly a 10% hike in, when they meet in mid-December. Do you think that hike is likely, and if it comes, what effect would it have on predictions for a recession next year?
There is always the possibility of an OPEC price increase in oil imported in the United States. They, in effect, have a monopoly. I would hope that the administration will be able to convince the OPEC nations that it's inadvisable for them, as well as for the free world, including the United States, to have a 5 or 10% price increase. In 1976, just before I left the White House, we had the same threat. And we were able to work with the Saudis and others to hold down or to postpone a price increase. I would hope that the administration would be successful, because if we have a significant increase in imported oil prices of anything near 10%, it will have a potentially devastating impact on the health of our U.S. economy.
Mr. Ford, do you feel that the Carter administration is handling conflicts properly with Soviet dissidents?
I believe that the Carter administration has not handled those in an effective way. You don't see any of the dissidents being given lighter sentences. You don't see any Soviet Jewish dissidents being released to come to the United States. Therefore, I have to come to the conclusion that they have been unsuccessful in handling the Soviet dissident problem. Well, I think we were reasonably successful. I can't say we batted 100%. We were able, in the process of quiet diplomacy, not public denunciation, to convince the Soviets that certain individuals like Kurdika, who you may or may not recall, was a fled to an American Coast Guard vessel and then was forced back, and we were able to convince the Soviets to release him, and he's now in the United States. But that was done by quiet diplomacy, not by pointing a finger or making public accusations. That's a better way, quiet diplomacy, rather than the way the administration on occasion has handled it.
Mr. Ford,
yes.
How do you feel about the development, the continued development of nuclear energy, particularly of breeder reactors?
I I'm again on record as president urging Congress to appropriate substantial funds for the development of the fast breeder reactor. I think that is one way that we should go to make ourselves less dependent on foreign oil imports. The other nations of the world, France, Great Britain, West Germany, and the Soviet Union, are all proceeding with the development of the fast breeder reactor. For us to stop, for us to quit, I think would be a mistake, because the fast breeder reactor doesn't require additional fuel. It makes its own. In fact, it makes more than it uses. To have France, Germany, and Great Britain and the Soviet Union move ahead of us in this regard, and for us to drop back, is a mistake. We'll regret that decision 10 years from now.
Mr.
Yes.
Ford, Mr. Carter's chief inflation fighter said yesterday that our only alternatives to his Carter's program are either wage and price controls or a deep depression, I think is how he put it. What is your reaction to that?
I was a little irritated with it, because they have put us in this dilemma. They have caused the problem. Now, I'm not sure his alternatives are the only options, but it certainly bothers me that the people who have caused the problem are now telling us we either have a recession, depression, or wage and price controls. I think it's a bothersome attitude. They have caused the problem by their irresponsible fiscal policy, by their loose handling of our money supply, and now, after they've caused the difficulty, now they're telling us that there are no options but two. Neither one of them are good. I think it's a little, I could use some strong language, but I'll just say that those that cause something then shouldn't go out and raise all kinds of evil consequences.
What do you think that those are the alternatives, or what would you advise?
No, I really believe that if they will responsibly handle our federal fiscal policy in a restrained way, hold down the rate of growth of federal spending, cutting back the deficit, and if they can get their program on the executive side coordinated with the Federal Reserve Board, and they, of course, handle monetary policy, I believe we can avoid either wage and price controls on the one hand, or a deep recession or depression, as Mr. Kahn says, on the other. Those kind of scare tactics are not constructive. Yes.
Mr. Ford, on the recent news of GSA corruption, someone on television this morning, the gentleman who is retiring, said that this corruption goes far back in several administrations. Did you know anything about that, or do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I asked the head of GSA, who had that position when I became president, to step aside, and I appointed a new head of GSA, Mr. Jack Eckert. I had heard some rumors about problems in GSA, and as a consequence, I thought we ought to have a new man at the head. We were in the process of making some investigations, and when Jack Eckert took over, he undertook a far broader scale of investigations and was in the process of, I think, finding out some of the problems that existed. He was only there about 18 months, and that's a big department and a big job, so he couldn't revolutionize it overnight. But he was making headway, and the facts are there that he was beginning to find out where the problems were, and we were on the brink, I think, of doing some wholesome house cleaning. Yes, I suspect over a period of time there was some corruption in GSA, and we tried to initiate the action that I think is now bearing fruit.
And now Richard Nixon is being named by Ronald Reagan as somebody who has much to offer the Carter administration by way of advice. And yet Ronald Reagan says Richard Nixon should not involve himself with the Republican Party. Isn't Richard Nixon good enough for the Republican Party?
I think he will have to decide if he wants to participate, and the leaders in the party will have to make a decision as to whether he should. It's my own feeling that he should stay in the background. For obvious reasons.
Do you see him as a detriment?
I think a person who's had the experiences he has, unfortunate as they were, he should stay in the background. No question about it in my mind.
Mr. Ford, several states are calling for a constitutional convention to force the federal government to maintain a balanced budget. Is that ultimately the only way the federal government is going to maintain a balanced budget?
Well, first we have to achieve it. When we haven't for a long time, I think the last time was about 1969. Which is too far back. I honestly believe we can maintain a balanced budget. Once we achieve it, unless we have a military conflict, unless we have an economic recession or depression, if you go back and look at the last budget that I submitted, which called for a five-year projection, you will see that by 1981, the fiscal year 1981, we would have achieved virtually a balanced budget. I think the deficit was $2 or $3 billion. And I think the next year in our projections, we could have accomplished it. I get a little bothered at times when I see some of the irresponsibility of the people in control who don't seem to tighten up, who are not concerned about restraining the rate of growth of federal spending. I would prefer not to go to a constitutional amendment. On the other hand, if we don't do better than we have done, we certainly ought to take a look at it as a mechanism to achieve it.
Yes.
Excuse me? Well, on the basis of information that was given to me in 1975 and 1976 by the responsible people in the Pentagon, the civilians, and the military, they made a recommendation it should be built here. I looked at other options, and it seemed to me that on the basis of their recommendation, and I looked into it very carefully, this was the preferable place. I can't say it was the only place, but it was the preferable one. Now, if circumstances have changed, of course, if I were in a position, I would review it. But based on the information given to me, and I personally looked into it, I made that decision. I can't back off from it. I don't go around saying one thing one year and something else the next. But on the basis of that information that I had in 1975 and 76, the project ought to be built in the national interest, and the preferable place was to build it here in the Upper Peninsula. Now, if circumstances have changed and I'm not that close to it anymore, of course I would review it. But to try and tell you that I didn't do it in 75 or 76, I don't play that game.
Mr. Ford, why
why wasn't that ordered to be done at that time? If it's needed so bad, why wasn't it, I don't understand, if something's needed so bad, why it's not done? Why it's been 20 years of waiting?
Well, we did our best to get it done. But we ran into opposition, we ran into problems locally as well as elsewhere. And all I can say is we did our best. We put in the money, we made a decision, and as far as we were concerned, it was fait accompli. Now, what's happened in the meantime, I'm not that familiar with the facts. Okay, one more.
Is Michigan going to beat Ohio State?
We're going to try. We better beat Purdue first. Doesn't do any good to beat Ohio State if you don't beat Purdue. Better win both of them. Nice to see you. Thank you very much.